Hey Nomads, welcome to Digital Nomad Stories, the podcast. My name is Anne Klaassen, and together with my co-host Kendra Hasse, we interview digital nomads. Why? Because we want to share stories of how they did it. We talk about remote work, online business, location independency, freelancing, travel, and of course, the digital nomad lifestyle. Do you want to know more about us and access all previous episodes? Visit digitalnomadstories.co. All right, let's go into today's episode. Hey, hey, nomads, welcome to a new episode of Digital Nomad Stories. Today I'm joined by Paul and Sandra. They have been location independent since 2016, so that's a while. I'm very excited to hear more about their experiences and what they've learned on the road. And they have a blog. It's called Minimalist Journeys, or I would say website, it's more than a blog, a website, minimalistjourneys.com. And they share a lot about intentional travel, sustainable travel, and also being a minimalist. And they travel with hand luggage only. I'm very excited for those tips and tricks because I've been on everywhere on that spectrum. You know, when I first started traveling, I took way too much. I had a huge backpack with all of my belongings. And then I went completely the other way where I had hand luggage only, and it worked for a while. But then after that, I was like, okay, I feel like I should find a middle ground. And every time I'm still asking myself, like, what do I actually have to take? Is it worth it to carry this around with me? Anyway, I think it's a big, big question for nomads and anyone who travels a lot. So Paul and Sandra, I'm very excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Amazing. So can you tell us a little bit more about you, what you do, and yeah, just a little bit more about you?
Sure. As you said, we've been on the road for 8 years. We used to have corporate careers. We lived in Sydney for 10 years and amassed in many possessions. And we had a big four-bedroom house and had the corporate career and had everything we wanted. But we also had a gardener, a cleaner. And because we worked hard in corporate careers, we had no life. So we decided to basically give it up, sell the house, get rid of the kids, and have been living on the road ever since.
Awesome. Well, big, big change, I think, especially that you mentioned that corporate careers were a big part of your life. It took up a lot of your time and just life. Yeah, like the whole lifestyle was around work, it sounds like. Yeah, that must have been a huge change.
And not around work, yeah. I mean, I worked as a management consultant back in those days, and as anyone in that field will know, that's long hours, it's deadlines, it's pressure, it's politics at work. And at some stage, we realized it's not really the life that we want to live. And it's all kind of started from there, really.
Well, actually, no, it didn't. It didn't really. We, funnily enough, a few years earlier, we'd actually gone on a three-month sabbatical. Mm. And we were both allowed to have time off from our work. And so we went away on the sabbatical. And we loved it so much. We went to Latin America and we came back home and we didn't want to come back home and we went into our jobs. And it's like we're away 24/7 with each other and absolutely loved it. And so it was, I think that was probably the nugget. That was the thing that sort of said, why can't we do this full time?
The first little seed that was put into our heads. Yeah, I mean, obviously the journey since, it took us another 4 years or so to actually arrive at, you know, at the point where we were able to actually take off and start our location independent life.
Yeah. What does life look like now for you? Where are you and kind of what do your days look like?
Right now we are in Switzerland, just outside Geneva. We can see the lake from here where we're staying. We do a house sit at the moment. So we do a lot of house sitting around the world in different places, looking after two dogs at the moment, which we take for dog walks, which is also very nice, especially in this countryside. And other than that, our days look pretty much the same anywhere where around the world. You know, we still get up and work 5 to 6 days a week, but on our business and on our terms. And if the weather is crappy, we work. And if the weather is beautiful and sunny, then we are out and about exploring. So we are quite a bit more flexible than we used to, and we take advantage of this, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think for me, I go for a lot of runs, so I run a lot. And so for me to be able to be in the countryside as we are right now and in different countries and going for my runs and exploring the neighbourhoods, you know, it's the first thing I do in the morning. I get up pretty early, as soon as the light is available, and head out for a run. And that starts my day off. Was I able to do it back when we had corporate careers? Yeah, absolutely. But I was probably only running for half an hour or 45 minutes before I had to get on the bus and head into work. And, you know, there's a lot more pressure there from that point of view.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's actually nice. I can go for a run, or we can go for a walk with the dogs, or we can go for a hike. It's pretty much, you know, whatever we want to do, really based upon the weather.
Yeah. Much more flexible than before. Lots more freedom. Amazing. Yeah,
for sure.
And
for
it
sure.
Sounds very nice, dog sitting or house sitting with two dogs and then right at the lake, nature in Switzerland. That sounds like a pretty cool dream come true experience.
Yeah, we actually are here in this area, particularly the second time. We did it 5 years ago when we were last in Europe, and we loved it so much. We came back, different dogs, slightly different village, but only 10 minutes further along the lake. So yeah, it's a gorgeous area.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that help us to be location independent and to be able to afford this lifestyle is the house sitting. The fact that we can, you know, it saves us around about 30% of our expenses by house sitting itself. And I guess it's like whether you do HelpX or whether you do woofing or whether you do house sitting, you know, the ability to save a chunk of money by offering services. For a couple of hours a day, you know, really helps in terms of saving money, but also from a lifestyle point of view, the experience that we get in different places and the different animals that we've looked after over the years.
Another point is as well for us, because we are on the road all the time, we can't have animals ourselves. Mm-hmm. So one day, maybe when we are settling down, then we have a whole bunch of them. But in the meantime, that's kind of our animal fix as well, the house sitting side.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a little bit like grandchildren. You know, you get to be able to spoil them rotten and then hand them back.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I really love dogs, and I'm obsessed with dogs. Okay, I'll be honest. I'm obsessed with dogs. And yeah, I also do some dog sitting here and there, but not really house sitting so far. I've looked into it, but I do some dog sitting also through an app. It's called Rover. And I love it. Like you said, it's definitely my animal fix for not having my own dog. At least I can hang out with dogs. And a co-living where I was a few weeks ago, they had a dog, and it was the best thing ever, just to hang out and just walk the dog, and such a different experience.
And I guess for us, it's because we've had so many years of experience with house sitting and looking after animals, we're a little bit more picky and choosy. And so therefore we make sure that the dog fits our personality and vice versa. You know, or sheep or horse or cow. I don't know.
I want to know how you match the sheep's personality.
Oh, come on. Sometimes we do. The alpacas. The alpacas occasionally.
Speaking of them, they just barked.
But yeah, it's we are a little bit more picky and choosy in terms of which house that we actually go to now, which is great for us. I guess a newbie coming on board and doing it for the first time, you can't be as much, but it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You have that experience now, and that profile probably also on the website, so that people can see your experience. Yeah, that must make a difference. So how do you balance this? Do you have a place somewhere and or are you fully nomadic, and do you go from house it to house it, or is there, I don't know, Airbnbs, any other accommodation that you balance out the house it's with? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I guess to answer the question, we don't go from house it to house it. We definitely need to have some time off after the house sits, because we see them as an assignment. We see them and work at them quite professionally, so it's quite important for us to dedicate our time to the house it. And so straight afterwards, we normally have at least minimum of 3 to 4 days to a week off between house sits to de-chill ourselves. But at the same time, when we are having breaks between the house sits, we will go stay at a short-term rental property. And again, we may stay for 1 week to 3 weeks to 4 weeks, depending on what
depends
we want to do.
Destination as well.
Depends on where we want to go and what we want to do.
Yeah. It's also house sitting. It's not, at least here in Europe where we are, it's not common in all countries. So we find in English-speaking countries it's more prevalent, or with expats. Particularly here where we are right now, Geneva and the surrounding area, a lot of people work in Geneva on, you know, UN things, etc. And that's more common here. But for example, Italy or the Netherlands or wherever, it's less common. So we also kind of pick and choose our the countries according to that and do house sits where it's more common and not house sits. And then do short-term rental where we can't do or don't want to do house sits.
Mm-hmm.
It always needs to fit into our schedule as well. So for Europe, because Paul has a New Zealand passport, he can only stay in the Schengen area for 3 months, and then we have to go out, and then we can come back in after 3 months. So we work around that a little bit as well, and kind of, yeah, which countries you want to visit, and either we do short-term rental or house sits or stay with friends, family, because obviously being in Europe, and I'm from Europe, we also catch up with people we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a bit of a balance between visiting people, catching up, and then house sitting and some short-term rentals in between to chill, recharge, get ready for the next house sit.
Yeah, and also the fact that on our website, we are travel bloggers. We do talk about intentional living and sustainable travel. So therefore, we do go to countries and destinations where we want to promote a certain type of travel and encourage a certain amount of type of travel. So we, as well as house sitting and doing what we want to do, it's almost downtime. It's we then head off to a destination where we can write about, and that's also part of our lifestyle and part of what we want to do and how we grow, how we learn.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, because I can imagine in the past 8 years that you probably learned a lot about business and travel and sustainable travel. Can you talk a little bit about what steps you took from when you were living in Sydney, you had your corporate careers and that seed has been planted already, right? You went on your sabbatical and you're like, oh, this is very interesting. We might want to leave again. How did you make that a reality?
A lot of planning. I guess, as Sandra said, in the 4 years between the 3 months sabbatical and leaving Australia, we planned a lot. We strategized. We knew we had to downsize. We obviously wanted to sell our house and our possessions and get rid of our possessions. We also knew that, and a little bit like you, for the sabbatical, we did have 70-litre backpacks. I had everything in the kitchen sink just in case.
Including a 3-kilo tripod.
Just in case.
just in case. That's another story for another day. And so therefore, it did take a little bit of planning to get us down to that stage of being ready to launch, to leave, to escape, to start on our next journey. And also the why came into it as well. Why are we actually doing what we're doing? Exit strategies as well. What happens if it doesn't work? How long do we want to be on the road for? So we actually did a lot of that planning during those 4 years. Testing,
especially at the beginning,
testing the waters, testing out equipment, testing out, as you say, when we did take it down to smaller backpacks and smaller amount of possessions, was that enough? Was it too much? Did we reduce, to the point where we had one or two pairs of underwear and we had to wash them all every second day in the bathroom sink? That's not a good idea, is it, if you want to do this long-term, full-time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did. I mean, with regard to the carry-on only travel, we did a bit of testing beforehand. We traveled in 2014 back to Europe, and it was our first attempt in just traveling with carry-on backpacks. And it worked well. We didn't have really an issue with that. But with regards to reducing our four-bedroom house down to minimal possessions, that took quite a bit of time. I remember we had a whole wall full of post-it notes where we kind of scheduled out kind of what do we need to do to finish off by that day. And we ended up even translating that into an Excel spreadsheet, coming both from a project management background. we worked towards that. I mean, it's simple things like, or they sound simple, is digitizing your lifestyle. You know, we had, or I had at least, folders up in folders in bookshelves and going through those and digitizing what I still wanted to keep. We had a scanner at home and whenever it was raining, whenever I had some time on a weekend, I would scan documents and go through and check stuff out. And to the point that Paul left 2 weeks before me, heading to New Zealand, and I had to finish off the last 2 weeks and took even a little bit with me, including the scanner, to New Zealand. And we sold it then in New Zealand. So just to finish it off, yeah. Photos, negatives, things like that. So that took actually quite a long time, even though with that project plan that we had.
Mm. It's kind of funny when you leave a country to go to another one, and you reduce things down and you close accounts, etc. People forget how difficult or how easy that part is compared to when you go to a new country and have to set up the bank account, the formal identification, the government ID, etc. And you don't know the process. So it's kind of a weird thing that the fact that for years you've been setting up your accounts at home, whether it be, you know, as you get older, you get a bank account and you do these different things. And it's easy because you've done it over a period of years. But yeah, going into a new country and what do I need for that country? Do I need a SIM card? Do I need a driver's license? Do I need the bank account? Do I need this and that? And it becomes so much harder to do that because it's all in a squashed into a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, we don't have to do that. When we go from country to country, and if we're in a country for 2 or 3 months, 6 months, it's a lot easier because we don't have to set up all those sort of things, even as long-term travel, because we're travellers, we're not tourists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think a lot of things you can take once you have that set up correctly, or like, I don't want to say set up correctly, I mean more like set up in a way that you can take it with you. Like some bank accounts are, or some banks are better suited for travelers and some are not. So then you want to make that switch once and, you know, set that up. And then you're okay. Then you can take it to different countries with you. Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of admin involved. And I personally think, I was talking with a friend about this the other day. Nomad life, it just has a lot of life admin. like there are other things that I don't do as much. Like, for example, I'm now staying in a co-living and cleaning is included. So I don't have to clean my room. I don't have to clean my bathroom for the time that I'm here, which is 2 months. I don't have to worry about that at all, which is amazing. Yeah. So I that saves me a lot of time, right? But then I also do book flights and make sure that I'm checked in for flights and Airbnbs and where am I going next? And, you know, coordinating all of that, that definitely takes more time. And yeah, especially setting it up at the start. How has the process been after you left Australia and you started nomading? And have you changed anything since then? Like slowed down or maybe traveled faster? Anything else that was just completely different from what you expected and you had to change?
All of the above a little bit.
Yeah.
the first year we spent traveling around the Americas. And we traveled actually with just one computer between the two of us. That's how we started. And
It's hard to comprehend nowadays.
It's hard to comprehend now, but we did actually manage. One of us had a tablet and would you know, draft blog posts, and the other one would then, you know, grab them from there and put them in a computer. But yeah, that's kind of how we started. And we realized after that first year, now we need another computer. And with the Surface Pros that we're using, they're light enough to do that. So that's one change, definitely. One thing that we didn't change is to just pick one continent a year. That kind of started right from the beginning and kind of has manifested itself being focused on responsible travel, that we are very conscious about our carbon footprint. And particularly with New Zealand as kind of the home base to a degree, there is only one option, you know, we can only fly really, and it's far away from everywhere. So yeah, that makes it extra special or extra focus for us, the carbon footprint. What else has changed or hasn't changed?
We both have 7 pairs of underpants each. That's pretty important.
That hasn't changed.
Well, I think it did.
The underwear changed.
Yeah.
I hope it changed in 8 years.
Seven
pairs. No, it's one of those things. It's like you're getting used to a certain number, etc. Which also then means we're washing once a week. Mm-hmm. Which then means that from a process point of view and all the rest of it, yeah, we're probably washing every 6 days because the 7th day. So I guess that hasn't changed. I mean, one thing that is important for us, which sometimes is quite hard depending on which country or continent, is buying replacement gear. Mm-hmm. And that's always the difficult part because what we have got is quality. What we have got is top of the range, best practice of the clothing that we wear or the technology that we've got, etc. But if we happen to be in a country where you're not able to get it, the concept of do we compromise, do we wait, do we hold on to it for as long as we can, etc. So we're quite conscious of when we buy things and what we're doing with it, and also what we're doing with it afterwards. If it's not fit for purpose anymore, what do we do with that merino t-shirt that's got holes in it, or the shoes that have now started to fall apart, etc. So these are things that we're quite conscious of, and our attitude has changed a lot over this period of time as well.
To be
much more conscious about what we're using and what we're doing with it, both bringing it on into our environment and removing it out of our environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, let's talk a little bit more about traveling with hand luggage only, because I think that's really interesting, especially because you're very interested in sustainable travel as well as minimalist travel. And I think that, you know, that mix is really interesting to me, because I have had times that especially when I was traveling with hand luggage only, but also now sometimes I need something and then I buy it, and then it's like, okay, so now I use this in this location. What do I do with this? You know, and sometimes I have to throw things out, which is not ideal, but then also what do I do with it? You know, so can you talk a little bit more about your approach to the minimalist travels and how you make sure that that's not a situation for you, or at least maybe not make sure, but maybe like minimize that, or what your approach is?
Sure. So between the two of us, we've got the same kit, whether we're going to Iceland and have minus 20 degrees, or whether we're in the Sahara in Africa, 35 degrees. So it's the same kit that we've got. We don't change it out. We hold on to it the whole time, and we travel with it the whole time. A couple of examples where things have had an impact. Last year, we were invited to a wedding, and the wedding was a black tie affair or a suit.
Certainly, men had to wear suits.
And women had to wear an evening dress.
A dress.
So that made it quite difficult, because I personally only own 3 T-shirts and a couple of pairs of pants. It's not suitable for going to a wedding. So what we did is, on the wedding was on a Sunday. On the Saturday afternoon, we went to an op shop and found a really nice suit for me, white shirt. Again, all secondhand from the op shop. Didn't need to be tailored or anything like that. It fitted perfectly. Wore it on the Sunday night to the wedding. On the Monday morning, we actually had a flight out, so we took it back to the op shop and basically gave it back to them. I mean,
Different op shop,
because I didn't
have time to watch it, but
the fact that I was able to, yeah, and what did it cost us? 50
Aussie dollars.
50 Australian dollars, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Whatever that was. So that's an example of where I'd made a conscious decision to buy something secondhand just for that one-off purpose.
And we did actually look into it, because, you know, ideally we would have just rented it and then returned it, but the renting was actually more expensive than going to a secondhand shop and buying it and then returning it.
And you had a dress?
And I bought a dress, and I still have a dress, because it's a really lightweight one, and I was due to replace mine anyway.
And it's from the same op shop?
Quality silk dress that I still wear.
Now, can you do that anywhere? It depends on where the wedding is, etc., or where you need to get dressed up for.
Yeah, but as I mentioned, renting would be an optional. We had a wedding a few years ago, which was not that formal. And in that instance, Paul borrowed a button-down shirt from his son. Hmm. So, and then his pants and everything else. They're fine for the wedding, and I had my dress. And I can dress it up or dress it down with accessories, and it still looks nice, you know, for a wedding, or good enough for a less formal wedding.
The one thing that we did buy a couple of years ago, we were in Sapporo for the Sapporo Snow Festival. Pretty cold conditions, and we felt we needed to get one more layer. And I think we both bought a pair of women's tights, stockings.
Tights, just to have an additional layer under our pants. But other than that, because before mentioned that range from, you know, minus 10 to plus 30 or thereabouts, we just layer up and down. So I think we counted it six or so layers we can we can put on maximum, you know, from base layer t-shirt, long sleeve t-shirt, jumper,
jacket.
We've got those vests and then our rain jacket. And if really worse, you know, in the worst case, we could even go again to an op shop in another country, say Iceland or so, if it was too icy conditions, and buy there a thick jacket with down inside, and then again return it afterwards. So if we had really, really extreme climates, which you really don't often have, then we could even do that in those instances, you know, what we did for the weddings, do it that way. But we found usually our range where we travel in temperature wise, the layering up or down is sufficient.
And I think when we're in Morocco and in the Sahara, it's the same thing. We're still wearing our merino t-shirts, walking around in the desert in the heat, because the merino is really good wool or good material for pulling the sweat away from your skin. So
you're not sweating, actually.
Yeah,
it's very pleasant.
Not as bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that, well, two things, layers, right? Because that works for all climates. And then the other thing is also a little bit of planning. So looking up, can I rent this, what I need in this very, very specific occasion, in this very specific location? And then if that's not really an option, like, are there other alternatives, but making a conscious decision and not just going for, okay, I have to buy this, but there are other options, and just kind of exploring what makes the most sense.
Yeah. And it's also, we don't want to look like, we call it the Oompa Loompa look, we don't want to look like tourists. It's not like we have, zip off pants or anything like that. You know, we don't
want to melt in. What people are wearing.
So,
you know, it needs to look smart enough that you can wear it to
a cafe or date night or anything like that. Yeah. So we still consider, not so much from a fashion point of view, but from a color point of view, from a capsule wardrobe point of view, that becomes quite important for us, for both of us. You know, so we have got the concept of the capsule wardrobe where we can mix and match. Most of the time it's a black pants. At the top, it's normally a color of some sort. And that means you can just mix those around. That said, most of our photos, we look the same. And
on the photos over and over again. But it doesn't bother us. And so far, no one has commented on it.
No one.
And we also, for how long do the t-shirts last?
Yeah.
So we do change them out occasionally, obviously.
It's funny how people have such a perception of what each other's looks like. But you wouldn't, if you ask somebody, what did they wear yesterday? You wouldn't have a clue. People have got no idea. They only care about themselves and what they look like as opposed to what the other people look like. So for us,
absolutely,
we look at each other and go like, oh, that's new, darling. And it's like, yeah, no, it's the same thing I've been wearing for 8 years.
It's so true. You feel like, oh my God, I always look the same, but other people, they don't care and they don't even see it. Yeah, absolutely. Was it a mindset shift that you had to make from going from a traditional lifestyle where you probably have a closet full of clothes and, you know, you wear something different every day to then, you know, really, really narrowing down your outfit choices?
Yeah, for sure. Especially as a girl, I had quite a few items in my wardrobe, but I also realized that I didn't actually wear them that often, the ones that I did have. And yeah, over time I reduced them down and did a test also. What do I wear? What do I need? And as Paul mentioned, the capsule wardrobe helps as well. And you don't actually realize it after a while anymore that you don't have that many items, because it also takes away that decision making. You know, you're not standing in front of a full wardrobe. Geez, I've got so much option, but I don't really know what to wear because there are only so many options. We talked about earlier, you know, how much time it frees up in this instance.
Yeah.
Because it takes bugger all in the morning to get ready.
And in fact, it makes it really easy when you're doing the washing, because you absolutely notice straight away if something's missing. A sock is missing. Because I've only got six socks, three pairs of socks. So when one of those pairs of socks is missing, or one of them is, then you notice straight away. We count the underwear coming back into our packs. It's like, you just know straight away if something's still been left in the dryer or in the washing machine.
Yeah. Okay, so it goes AWOL in other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we also talked a little bit about sustainable travel already, you know, especially your travel style of picking one continent per year and not flying up and down too much. What else do you do, or do you have any advice for people who also want to be conscious about their carbon footprint or just sustainable travel in general? Do you have any other tips that you can share with us or things that you find very important?
Yeah, I mean, for us, sustainable travel or being a responsible traveler is not just the ecological side, which is carbon footprint, but also, you know, reducing plastic waste and any other waste, food waste, whatever it might be, but also the cultural and social component to it and spreading, for example, the money that we do spend in a way that it benefits the communities that we visit. So we, for example, we don't stay in like the Hiltons and Marriotts and whatever in any big hotel chain. We stay in with locals, you know, in homestays, in short-term rentals, which is not just from the perspective that it benefits the community, but it also is great for us because we can chat with locals. We get a better understanding, you know, about the country that we are visiting. We get tips from our hosts. You know, be it restaurants, be it places to go, nice waterfalls that not everyone knows, things like that, which is obviously great also for travel bloggers like us to get those tips that we then can share or don't share, depending on how we feel about those places. So yeah, that definitely is one thing. And one thing we also learned, especially in that first year that we were on the road in the Americas, when we traveled to the Galapagos, you know, first thing that comes to mind is the cruises that they offer, the ships that go from island to island and to see the wildlife in the Galapagos. But we realized when we were there, 90-odd% actually of the money that travelers spend actually does not stay in those islands, that goes overseas, because the boats are owned by overseas people and so forth. So we decided consciously to just do day trips with locally owned boats and things like that. So that tourism leakage concept that we had no idea about, but we are more focused on that we make sure that the money we spend stays in those communities. And we can, that's kind of what we recommend others to do as well.
Mm-hmm. I think also for me, and what's changed over the years, the use of public transport, the use making use of public transport, not using a taxi, not using a ride share as much as we possibly can, but by using the public transport, again, we're also being associating with the locals. You know, seeing us on a bus with the locals, it's kind of a weird thing for them because they're not used to seeing a tourist, and sometimes we do stand out, even in our nice capsule wardrobe look and feel. you still stand out. But taking public transport is obviously cheaper. It's more sustainable. You're doing things with the locals, you're seeing things differently. Sometimes you're getting lost if you take the wrong route or you get off at the wrong station or whatever, which is also part of the experience. So, public transport was a big one for me that I've embraced a lot more than ever before. Or we walk from a fitness point of view, from a health point of view, from seeing the neighbourhood. You know, if we're getting off at a foreign train station and have to walk to our accommodation or get to our accommodation, we'll walk it because that way we can see where the local cafes are, the supermarket is, the fruit shop, etc. It gives us this opportunity to be able to go from A to B. That makes a big difference for us as well because then we can come back to these places, contribute to the neighbourhood, contribute to the community, put money back into the local shops.
Yeah, it's definitely for us the concept of walking distance has broadened because previously like a kilometre and a half was kind of the maximum even with backpacks, but these days 2-2.5-3 kilometres without backpacks because they're carrying only that, not that heavy, is not a problem. But obviously, if you had a trolley pulling behind you,
with wheels, right.
So with our backpacks, we can do that.
Yeah, I think these are really good tips, and they're quite easy to implement, right? Like just take the bus instead of take a taxi. I think that's a really easy thing to do, and you know anyone can do that in most places. So I think that's very. Yeah, very like an easy tweak that we can all make to travel a little bit more sustainably.
That said, I think what you were intimating before in terms of your change in focus and your change of tasks happens as well when as a digital nomad. So luckily for us, we've got more time to do things. We've got more time to research. We've got more time to look at, I'm going to the next destination. What do I have to do to prepare for it? If you're a busy person, if you're a tourist and you've got 2 weeks at this place, you know, you may not have as much time. So therefore, you will go to the travel agent or you'll jump online or you go get a taxi because time is important to you. And that time spent doing that means you're freed up to do other things. Our time is spent enjoying doing what we're doing, of getting on the public transport and researching beforehand. We're not in a rush. And we do that purposely. That's what we want to do. That's our life. That's more important to us, to be able to do that research, have that knowledge, and to be able to implement what we've learned.
Yeah. Plus also, I mean, it's for us, that research, as we are preparing for a new destination. But we also then, when we write about the destination, we know we can pass on that knowledge that we learned. You know, how does the public transport system work? You know, where do you buy your tickets? Those kinds of things. So it's not kind of a one-off only for us. It's also then created in a way for other people.
Yeah, it's a good time investment because everyone can benefit from it.
No, I don't think. The only other thing that we've implemented, I guess, for us, obviously money is important for everybody in terms of reducing costs. And one of the things that we found was at the banks even, withdrawing money from the ATMs. Again, it comes back, it's a little bit of the same thing. Doing the research beforehand, knowing which banks you can go to be able to get a fee-free or transaction cost-free to be able to withdraw your money, which one's safe, which one's not scammy, where can you go to, et cetera, where are they, et cetera, in terms of getting off the public transport. So, again, these are areas where we've learnt over the years what's important with dealing with our money, you know, from a money safety point of view, from a risk point of view. These are the we've made changes over the years. And again, just purely from experience as well, from the 3 month trip that we did. we did a lot of research for that as well, but we're now so much more, it's almost second nature for us in terms of how much money do we have on us, how do we deal with that side of things as well.
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing for us is that everything that you learned, or maybe not everything, but a lot of what you learned in those 8 years of traveling is now available on your blog because you wrote articles about that. And yeah, like we just said, we can all benefit from the research that you've done already and the experiences that you had. Can you tell us where people can find all the blogs and also if there's any other places to find you online?
Absolutely. So our website, Minimalist Journeys, so that's minimalistjourneys.com. Is the main website. We are on social media, but not as much as a lot of our other travel bloggers. We're primarily on Facebook and Instagram, so you can search us by Min Journeys and look at that handle and you'll be able to find us pretty easily. And that's where you can find us. I'm very open to questions, very open to learning what other people are doing. But as much as receiving questions about destinations that we've been to and how we've actually managed to have this lifestyle and continue to love this lifestyle.
Amazing. We'll make sure to add the links in the show notes. So if you're listening, you can go there. Definitely click the link and just browse the blog because I think there's such good information on there. And yeah, Paul and Sandra, thank you so much for being here today and sharing a little bit about your story with us.
And thank you very much. It's been great.
Awesome. And thank you for listening. See you in the next one.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it very, very much. I would appreciate it even more if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts for me. That way, more people can find this podcast, more people can hear the inspiring stories that we're sharing, and the more people we can impact for the better. So thank you so much if you are going to leave a review. I really appreciate you, and I will see you in the next episode.